Okay, we're still in our haphazard series of following Christ. Not that following Christ is haphazard, but our series has been a little haphazard. We've been kind of creating it as we go here. We haven't been, I haven't been ahead very much. So if it seems like we jump around a little bit, we probably are. But still, the topic of following Christ. And we've looked at a few things already. And as a quick review, one of the primary things that has impacted us in this study so far has been that there must to follow Christ is costly. And there must be a core change. And Jesus did not hesitate to ask, even demand, that core change. It's not something that a man really can ask of another man. That you change your whole purpose and direction and reason for living. This influences every decision you make. It's for this purpose that you do everything you do. Change your core. Or let me change your core, Jesus says. Forsake all and follow me. Take up your cross and follow me. And that is primary to understanding what it means to follow Christ. Now, it's something that we diminish and we water down. It just sounds so drastic to say that, to ask that of someone. But Jesus asked it. And so we'll just repeat what he said. And that's one of the primary things that we've been looking at, or the things that have stood out to me. And we had this quote that we've read it a few other times, and it still impacts me. It's a quote from William Carey, who was a great missionary, one of the first modern type missionaries to India. And out of this background that I just mentioned to you briefly, not out of human strength or personality or effort, but out of the background I just told you, he said, expect great things from God, attempt great things for God. And the job of the body is to prepare people to do what God has called them to do. Now, a lot of those things do take place within the context of the body, but certainly not all of them do. And God has called you and He has a purpose for you. He's given you He has a calling, a purpose for your life, a reason for living. And part of the body's job is to prepare you to do those things that God has called you to do. In other words, we are to get in the yoke with Jesus. He's going in a direction, and we are to get in the yoke with Him. Submit to the yoke. He supplies the power. He supplies the direction. He supplies the everything. But we still must submit and get in the yoke with Him. And the body has a great place in that in your life. Doing it with you, partnering with you, preparing you, equipping you, working alongside you. But still, there is a personableness to God's call on His plan for your life. We looked at that. That God has a plan for your life. He has things that He has ordained for you to do. And to do those things requires to get in the yoke with Jesus and submit to Him. And almost as if making a point of this, Jesus called these 12 men to follow Him. And these are the 12 guys that He's gonna have to leave the earth here in a few years. And He's gonna train these guys. They're gonna take over where He left off. And so He called the 12 greatest minds and intelligent. No, He didn't. He called 12 very ordinary men. People like you and people like me. From all different. They were different. Now, there are certainly the four that we know the most about were fishermen. But we also have a tax collector and a zealot. We have different personalities, maybe I should say. But there was unity there, and they were ordinary people. Even a little, maybe a cut under ordinary. Certainly not a cut above. And that's an encouragement to me, the more I look at this, of what God expected of these men. Yet, they were nothing extraordinary. Yet, what God expected of them and what they did in the power of God, in the power of the Holy Spirit. So, there's an absoluteness to the call that we want to turn our heads to a little bit. It's a little bit frightening. It's a little bit frightening, the absoluteness of the call. And you look and you see where Jesus called some, and many hung their heads, walked away, because it frightened them because of the absoluteness of the call. And, you know, one of the things that Jesus said is if anyone doesn't He demanded absolute commitment to Him. If you do not hate your father, mother, brother, sister, children, wife, if you don't hate all these other relationships with people in comparison to your love for me, then you're not worthy of me. You're not a true follower of me. And we ask that question, is this a part of your Christian experience? Is this the way that you love Jesus? You love Jesus with this kind of love. Now, this kind of love doesn't make you love your family less. It certainly does not. In fact, when you really get down to it, it's the only way you can really love your family, your friends, your church, non-believers. It's the only way you can love anybody with the way that God intended you to love them, is if you love Him that much greater. This must be a part of our experience with God. That we have, you're missing the boat if you don't have this kind of love for Jesus. You're missing the oomph of the life. You're missing it if you don't go in this direction. The call was given to these men, these 12 men, and the hard messages were heard by them. I mean some hard messages. If you don't drink my blood and eat my flesh, shocked. It shocked the people. It shocked the crowds. And they only understood what he was saying to a certain level. If they would have understood all of it, it would shock them even more. But they turned away. They turned away. But these 12 ordinary men that did not have much going for them, but they had this going for them, they did leave everything behind and follow Jesus. They were willing for their core purpose to be changed. Did it take some time? Well, it took an initial big step, and it took an initial willingness to forsake all. Yet, the real change did take a little bit of time. It did take some time to see it lived out. But they were willing. They were willing to have their core purpose changed when Jesus said, take me on completely. Eat, sleep, breathe, Jesus. Work, play, Jesus. He's at the core of everything. That's what he was asking of them. Take him on completely. And then we looked at that. What is he asking of me? What is he asking of you? And what we came up with is that you are the minister. And if I have to have a description of my job, of a job of an elder, of a leader, pastor, shepherds, is to train you to do your job, to be a minister. Because you are a minister every bit as much as I am a minister. Now, hopefully, leadership in the church will be in a living example of what it means to minister in their daily life. But add on to that, equipping and training you to do your job. This is not just about you having a more fulfilling life, about being at peace and having a good family. All those things are really, really good. But that's not what this is about. This is about equipping you and training you to do the work of the Lord, to walk with Him, to represent Jesus, to be a representative of Him. And these apostles, what they received the teaching from Jesus, a skeleton of what was going to be, the flesh was going to be added in the rest of the New Testament. They received an outline of what the church was to be about. And they had the truth. They had this foundational truth, and they spoke this truth, not out of knowledge, but out of the yoke, out of a life that is all about Jesus. They spoke out of intimacy with Him. You remember when they first started, it's only recorded in John, but He said to them, this is when Jesus, right after Jesus was baptized, and He said, they were questioning Him, and He said, come and see. Come and see. It was before the official call. He said, come and see where I am. And they went and they hung out with Jesus from about 4 o'clock in the afternoon till late in the evening. And they came away from that going, this is the Messiah. This is Him. We will follow Him. So this whole thing of come and see, we should be living like Jesus that we could say, come and see. Hang out with me for a little while. And Jesus will be revealed to you. Just come and see. So, Jesus in His training of the 12, we can learn from how Jesus trained these 12 disciples. In His training of the 12, He shows them compassion. He encourages them. He shows them friendship. He shows them His humanness. You know, the book, the Gospel of Mark, emphasizes the humanness of Christ. And that's will be in the Gospel of Mark today. And the Gospel of John emphasizes the deity of Christ. He is 100% God, 100% human. Yeah, we can't understand that. I hope you don't think you can understand that. But he revealed his humanness to these men. But you know, he doesn't baby them in his discipling, his training of them. He does not baby them. He does not cater to their flesh at all. Not at all. He has great compassion, great empathy, great mercy. But you remember, he said, forsake all and follow me. He said, when the crowd gathered, the 5,000 gathered, he said, you feed them. Guys, you feed them. They're going, with what? You feed them. He didn't baby them. He didn't cater to their flesh and to their weakness. He said, where's your faith? I'm with you. Where's your faith? Now, he had great community and fellowship among them, but he didn't separate them and protect them from the world. They sat and ate with the tax collectors and the sinners. They didn't retreat and just have this little Christian community among themselves in this cloistered environment. They went out into the world. So, you'll see this later in the disciples, the apostles in the New Testament. They will not baby these new believers. They will not cater, okay, Liddy, they will not cater for the, Oh no, I would have found somebody else, Liddy, if I was going for the catering. Do you know what I mean by that? But see, disciple making is not done by one person in a body. The whole body together builds and equips disciples. So it's like the whole body has to be kind of on the same page. So we don't feed the flesh in other individuals. There takes a little experience here. And you fail a few times. And we're going to talk about this a little more today. We'll see some hints on building and equipping what our job is as the body together to build and equip each other and new people that come in. Well, I'll give you some hints about how that is done. Training. So that was your review. Now, we're going to carry on with, we have to know a little bit. It helps to know a little bit about the ministry of Jesus, because obviously Jesus' main ministry really was to these 12 guys. That was his main ministry. And remember, we looked at, even there was even an inner group from that. 4 guys, and then 3 guys that were they were with him a little more than the others. But as you look at Jesus' ministry, he starts off being baptized in the Jordan River, just up north from the Dead Sea. And you'll see the very first part of his ministry is going to be right in this area of Judea. Judea is all of this area here. For the next, Perea is over here, which I'm going to refer to in a minute. So the very first part of his ministry is there, but very quickly, Jesus heads north, about 75 miles, I'm told, by the stairs, that up to around the Sea of Galilee. So the main part of Jesus' ministry is called the Galilean ministry. And when you're reading and you see all these references to the Sea of Galilee and Capernaum, there, that was the headquarters for Jesus. He moved, that was kind of his headquarters for his ministry. That's where he operated out of for about 2 years. Now, the later, and Matthew, Mark, and Luke covered this ministry the most. They're called the Synoptic Gospels. They kind of have the same viewpoint. So Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you'll see they're very similar in how they cover the life and the ministry of Jesus. The book of John covers more of the Judean ministry, which is the last about 7 months, maybe 7 months to a year of Jesus' ministry. He comes down to the area around Jerusalem and Perea out there. Now, when he's in Galilee, you'll see it referred to Jerusalem or the temple sometimes. That means he's probably come down for the Passover. So probably every Passover during his approximately 3 years of ministry, he would come down to Jerusalem. They'll record some activity there. Then be back up to Galilee. All in that whole area up around the Sea of Galilee is where most of his ministry was. And most of those guys, the main group, were fishermen. That up at the north half of the Sea of Galilee is where the best fishing was. And that's where they were spending their lives. That's where they were going to live and die before Jesus interjected himself into their lives. So all of that takes place, the Galilean ministry. up there. The other is called the Judean ministry, down the Judean Perea ministry for the second part. As you're reading through the Gospels, it can kind of orient you to know that. So, a little more on the Gospels is that record the information that we're gathering here is Matthew, a tax collector, Jewish, writing to Jewish people, very detailed on where Jesus, his lineage, that this is really the Messiah, the son of David, and traces his lineage and goes into great detail about Jewish things, and it's long and it's detailed. Then you have Mark, now Matthew written by, Matthew the Apostle. Mark is more written to a Gentile audience, mostly to the Christians around Rome, and it's very much boom, 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 boom. Let's just get to the cross. Let's record this act of Jesus, this act of Jesus. And it doesn't get that much into his teaching. But it's a fast paced. It gives you a good, quick flavor for the life of Jesus. And that's the book where we're going to be today. Mark, that's John Mark, who you remember. He failed. Remember, he was headed out with Paul and Barnabas, and he wasn't doing too well, and he got sent home. Or he left, is what happened. He ran. He took off. He couldn't take it. And he failed. Now, he recovered. He was a served, co-labored with Paul. He also was close to Peter. And most think that, John Mark was not an eyewitness of these things, but he got his information, most think, from Peter. Now, how could he relate to Peter, do you think? Peter had a pretty big failure too, didn't he? Maybe they could talk about that and see how Jesus brought them out of that. And they recovered from it, and they were used greatly of God after that. So then, you have Luke. You all know who Luke is, wrote the book of Acts. Luke, also to a Gentile audience, but to more of a general Gentile audience than this specific group in Rome. And Luke is more detailed. But Luke is a historian. He doesn't miss a thing. He goes through it just meticulously, going through and tracing the life of Jesus. You know, Luke was a companion of Paul and had access to all of the other apostles. Definitely the historian type when you read through the Gospel of Luke. And more, in a sense, towards the humanness of Christ, as Mark is also. And John focuses mostly, like I said, on the Judean ministry. A couple of things that happen around Galilee. But most of it, in fact, a great majority of it, is the last week of Jesus' life. He focuses on the deity of Christ and the intimacy of his relationship with Christ. And that last week, I love reading those last from chapter 13 on in the book of John. And it gives you that, just that, what it's like to sit around the table with Jesus. So, that's where, from those four evangelists, they're called, the gospel writers, those four guys are the ones that recorded what we're trying to look at here, what we're trying to glean from this of Jesus training the 12. So, I think we can show that off now. Thank you. So, where we are in Mark today is chapter 4. And a brief, let me just catch you up. We're not doing this chronological, through their lives, but this is where we're going to cover first, though, the Galilean ministry. We'll do that for the next couple Sundays. In this first part in Mark, we're going to be in chapter 4 looking at a specific parable of the sower and the seed. But so far in Mark, what's happened before this parable is taught by Jesus is obviously he's recorded these things. Remember briefly, John the Baptist. It only took him, half a column in my Bible, half a page. And then he records the call of calling the 12. He records casting out of evil spirits, giving that knowledge of the power of Jesus over Satan. Also his compassion that he reaches out and he heals diseases, sickness, but he also casts out demons. He healed the one with leprosy, the paralyzed guy that was lowered down through the roof. That's in Mark. He heals Peter's mother-in-law. That Mark, funny that he would record that with that association with Peter. And there's much recorded about Jesus' prayer. Just these things. Jesus went up on the mountain to pray. He didn't give us a lot of detail, but just tells us. And it's funny that in the way that Mark words things is that the disciples would come out looking to him, looking for him. Jesus, we got a lot to do. We got all these people. And Jesus is away on the mountain praying when there's all this stuff to get done. Yet he is the one out alone praying in the wilderness. And he talked about faith a lot. He talked about faith. And he engaged the Pharisees. He engaged them in debate, in discussion. And he hung out with sinners and tax collectors. And he experienced rejection from his own family. Some level of rejection from his own family. And he stated that his true family are those that follow Jesus. That was his response to that. So now here we have the crowds. At this point, Jesus is popular. His popularity is built. The crowds are following him. He's up here at the north end of he's up here in the Sea of Galilee, and the crowds are coming in. And so he gets in the boat, and he gets out from the shore a little bit, and he sits down in the boat. And this is the setting that he's going to teach them. Now, he's going to use parables during this time period. And the thing about the parables is, without faith, they will not be understood. They'll be enjoyed like a good story, but their hearts will not be pierced because they do not have faith. They will not have ears to hear. They could not hear. They did not really understand what Jesus was saying through the parables. Now, we have a couple of times where Jesus told us what the parables really meant. And this is one of those times. And maybe he did this for the disciples more often, but it's not recorded. There's only a couple of times where this is recorded. And the seed and the sower is one of the parables that we have recorded. So let's go to Mark 4:1-9. There, I did kind of like Mark this morning. I gave you guys a whirlwind tour of the Gospels. Overview. Okay, this is the actual parable, and then we'll go to Jesus' explanation of it in just a minute here. So 1-9 of chapter 4. Again, Jesus began to teach by the lake. The crowd that gathered around him was so large that he got into a boat and sat in it out on the lake while all the people were along the shore on the water's edge. He taught them many things by parables, and in his teaching said, listen, this is an important parable. If you get that feel, he explained it. He kept saying, listen, if you have ears to hear, listen up. This is kind of his attitude in this. So here he goes. A farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among the thorns, which grew up and choked the plants so that they did not bear grain. Still other seed fell on good soil. It came up, grew, and produced a crop, multiplying 30, 60, or even 100 times. Then Jesus said, he who has ears, let him hear. On one level, the sower and the seed, the sower is Jesus, and the seed is the gospel. He's going to sow the seed of the gospel. Yet it goes deeper and further than that. In fact, it goes all the way to you personally. If this seed, and we're going to be told in just a minute, is the Word of God, the Word of Christ, and this is sown into your life, then what will happen when it's sown into your life? This is the Word, even this morning, the Word is being sown into your life. What will happen to that word that has been sown, scattered into your life? Will you sow it into others' lives with the good seed of the word from the hand of the Master? Will you sow that into others' lives? Remember how he treated his disciples? Compassionately, lovingly, but you feed them. You have a job to do. You sow the seed. Is the word going to produce a crop in your life? That's the purpose. The Word of Christ, the seed, it should produce a crop. It should be fruitful in your life. What responses are you making to the Word? There is a response that must take place to the Word. And, so I have a lot of questions for you this morning. And where are you sowing? You are, in one sense, you are the receiver. Your heart is the soil. On the other hand, you are the sower. As any believer is, that has a responsibility to sow the seed of the gospel. So let's read Jesus' explanation of this parable in Mark 4:13-20. Then Jesus said to them, "Don't you understand this parable? How then will you understand any parable? The farmer sows the word. Some people are like the seed along the path where the word is sown. As soon as they hear it, Satan comes and takes away the word that was sown in them. Others, like seed sown on rocky places, hear the word and at once receive it with joy. But since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. Still others, like seed sown among thorns, hear the word, but the worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, and the desires for other things come in and choke the word, making it unfruitful. Others, like seed sown on good soil, hear the word, accept it, and produce a crop 30, 60, or even 100 times what was sown." Like we said, the sower here is Jesus, but it is also anyone with the gospel. Also, it is the word shared with the believer. I think this is part of Mark's point here. He's writing to these believers in Rome, and they're about to undergo persecution. And they have been undergoing some persecution. And he has it for them for their purposes as a believer. It also applies to the non-believer that is hearing the gospel. So, as we were saying, this word is taught here and in churches around the country, around the world, every Sunday, and more times throughout the week. The crop is fruit in your life, and it is your fruitful ministry. These disciples were expected to have both. They're expected to have fruit in their life, evidence of Jesus, looking like Jesus, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control, all those things. That I always miss one. Faithfulness. They were expected to have that, and they were expected to have ministry. A crop. Fruitful ministry. That was the expectation. According to the design of the body, the church, you receive the word each week in many ways. The true testing of hearing, though, is obedience. You know, how many times does somebody hear teaching or read in the word and think, it's kind of like a parable. It's like, oh, that was nice. Wasn't that nice? I liked hearing that. Whew. It's gone. It's gone. It has made no impact. No heart change. No change in how people live. No change in thinking and in living. So what stops the word from being fruitful, from bearing fruit in your life? And what stops you from being fruitful in ministry? You see, we can't always read hearts of others. So much sowing is good. You get this picture from the sower. He's doing a lot of sowing. He doesn't examine and doing soil tests and, okay, here's one. I'll put in one seed here. There. That's a nice one. That one will do good. He's out scattering the gospel. Much sowing. That's the picture that we get. So what prevents the word from taking root where the gospel is scattered? And what prevents the word from taking root in your very own heart? Have you been obedient to everything that's been taught, that you've heard, that you liked and you heard? Then what happened to it? Where did it go? It was sown into your life. So where did it go? What happened to it? We'll see what happens to it. It also happens to those that you share with. Now, if you look down in verse 15, it says, some people are like the seed along the path where the word is sown. As soon as they hear it, Satan comes and takes away the word that was sown in them. That's kind of the picture that I just gave you. That was nice. That was good. Like, oh, that was a good story, Jesus. I enjoyed hearing that. I learned something. And nothing happens. Satan has stolen that thing just like that. You didn't even know it. He took it right from you. How did he do that? Well, for one thing, you may not have had faith. That could be a person that's hearing the gospel with no faith, takes no root. Or, as a believer, no shield of faith, and the fiery darts go straight in. Because you don't have your shield of faith. And Satan takes it right away with that attack. Now, the response you may see here is anger at the word. Why are you picking on me? Or dismissal. that's not for me. That doesn't apply to me. Or simply pride. I'm fine. I don't need that. Just not listening. The next reason the word can, we can lose it. Verses 16 and 17. Others are like the sown on rocky places, hear the word and at once receive it with joy. But since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes, because of the word, they quickly fall away. Trouble and persecution steal the effect away. Sounded good on Sunday, but Monday's a different story. As soon as the first difficult thing, as soon as the first mean person, as soon as the first flat tire, as soon as the first anything, boom, the soil hardens and no root goes down. A little difficulty and no faith and it takes no root. The word you heard is of no value to you because you are not trusting Him through life's ups and downs. You see, this one's pretty low on the list, isn't it? This is right next to, it doesn't even, nothing. It's right next to, boom, bouncing off the soil so hard. This one is not much better. If you hear it and you like it on Sunday, but on Monday, the first little trouble that comes your way and it throws you, you need to do something. Something needs to change. You need to have some faith. We're going to talk about that in a minute. It's good to identify what the problem is. Verses 18 and 19, next category. Still others, like seed sown among thorns, hear the word. But the worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, and the desire for other things come in and choke the word out, making it unfruitful. These ones last a little longer, and they look like they're doing okay, and they're going to be fine, and they may continue to look like they're okay. But in reality, there's no fruit. In reality, they stick around. They still read their Bible. They still come to church. But there's no fruit. There's no life like Jesus in them that is apparent. And there's no fruitful ministry. Why? The first thing it says, the worries of this life. Now we'll deal more with this particular one in just a minute. But anxiousness is fear. Anxiousness about this life, that's fear. Fear is lack of faith. Lack of faith is sin. Anxiousness chokes out if you're worried about this and that and what's going to happen and what might happen and what did happen and what could happen. You don't hear. Nothing changes in your life because of that anxiousness. And we'll, like I said, we'll deal with that in a little bit more. The second one is the deceitfulness of wealth. You don't have to be rich to have this one. It's where are you trying to put your security? Where is your treasure? That's where your heart is. And what are you placing your security in? Is it in Jesus or is it in your savings? Is it in your retirement? Is it your potential retirement? Is it in your stocks? Is it in your job? What is your security in? Is it in Jesus? Is it in your family? Or is it in Jesus? So, deceitfulness of wealth. Number three, the third reason why it seems to be okay, it seems to be working, but it gets choked out. Desire for other things. This goes back to your core. What happens is you accept the core of Jesus, you forsake all and follow Christ. Oh, but that looks nice. That'll be fun. Off you go. And there your focus. It's not that you can't enjoy other things. You should enjoy other things. But they don't get your focus. They don't get your love. They're for your enjoyment, not for your focus and your purpose. You have taken on the purpose of Christ at your core. Have you taken on the purpose of Christ at your core all the time, every day? It's a constant battle. Be prepared. That's a constant battle. Desire for other things. It always gets you off course, and that's what it's saying. And then you no longer hear the word. What do I mean by hear the word? It no longer has its effect in your life. It's no longer obedience and growth because your desire for other things. And a final barrier to crop producing in our list here. Well, that desire for other things, that's the final official barrier listed there. That's a big one. That desire for other things. That is huge. Sometimes people get through all these other things and then they get distracted with this minor thing and that minor thing. And Jesus is no longer the focus. You've left your first love, is the way it's termed in Revelation. So, producing a crop. part D there on your outline, a caution for you here. I say better no fruit than bad fruit. What that means is sowing into other people's lives your own bad fruit. Investing in people, but with your own self rather than the fruit of Jesus. Now, over the years, I've seen this happen. I've watched it happen. And I've seen there's one common factor there is an exclusiveness in sowing. A focus on one person or two people possibly, and an ignoring of other people. May treat one person fantastic and the others not so hot. That's a sign. There's a world of difference in what Jesus did with the three of the inner circle and what we're talking about here. When someone focuses on the person themselves, on that person, and appeals to their flesh through attention or flattery or other means, rather than a selfless love for Christ that is passed on. So sometimes investing in discipling is done, well, it looks like that, but for selfish reasons, with a wrong focus. And a selfless love for Christ is not passed on, because the means is either flattery, attention, or those types of things, rather than that selfless love for Christ. That's what I mean by Jesus did not baby His disciples. You see, if a disciple had been babied and protected and attention for the flesh poured out upon them, that would ruin them for later work in the kingdom. Because they would continue to look for that because it feels good. So that kind of disciple making does negative impact. And that's what Jesus, you can see that throughout His ministry. And you say, boy, that was hard. No, it wasn't hard. He had great love and compassion for them. And He called them to a high standard. And that's how we help each other. In that way. So, with that brief caution, let's go on to verse 20. Others, like seed sown on good soil, hear the word, accept it, and produce a crop 30, 60, or even 100 times what was sown. When we humbly take in the word, and when these barriers we talked about are taken down, then there is fruit. That's the result of the word being sown in your life. There will be fruit if these barriers are gone. There will be fruit, abundant fruit, a multiplying crop, investment in others that grows through the years. Now that doesn't mean that, oh, here I've got 10 people I led to the Lord last week. That doesn't mean that. It means that when you look back over your lifetime, that there's this investment, who's invested in that one, invested in that one. You don't know until you get to heaven what the abundant crop is. But it's a continual, selfless investment in others over a lifetime. Abundant fruit. It grows through the years. Now, very briefly, got a few more minutes. I want to tell you, deal with the fear and doubt that the statements that I just made can bring on you. Because I just told you that there's ministry is expected of you. 30, 60, 100 times? Fruitful, abundant ministry? I just laid that on you. And then some of you are going, ugh, I can't do that. Well, I'd like to deal with that thought. So I don't leave you hanging. Under part E there is where we are on your outline. Now, I read this thing about this abundant fruit, this multiplying crop, and I immediately see my shortcomings. That's the first thing I see when I look that over, honestly look at it. Now, some may read it and think, yeah, I've got a plan and I got the personality for that kind of fruit bearing, and I can do it. Well, you have a problem too. And your problem is like mine. Your problem is pride also. Just the other end of it, just the other end of the stick, but they're both pride. A self-focus. The only appropriate response when you look at this challenge of what is expected of you to bear an abundant crop is to look to Jesus. When the thought comes, and it will come as it comes to me, I am so weak, I failed again, I can't do this. Do you ever think like that when you look at the things that God has called you to? Now, I want to believe verse 20. I want to believe it, and I want to live it. And so I'm going to tell you what I've been doing all week. Because I've been particularly tempted lately with, I'm so weak, I can't do this, I can't have this abundant crop that Mark is telling us about in chapter 4, verse 20. I start to feel stressed or anxious or weak, like a failure, or selfish, or self-focused, or any of those 1 through 3 listed above. And I repeat the words of Jesus, and they come alive in my heart. So let's go to Mark chapter 6. You remember the storm? They're in the wind and the waves, and they're rowing across the Lake of Galilee there. And then there's Jesus walking out across the water to them, and what in the world is going on? And they're afraid. Immediately He spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. Now remember those words as we go through this. You know, we won't go there, but in Mark 25:25, there was the servant that had received the talent. He was supposed to invest it and make some more money, but he was afraid and he buried it and he got into big trouble. What caused him to bury it? He was afraid that he couldn't do it. And then Mark 5:35, while Jesus was still speaking, some men came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue ruler. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Ignoring what they said, Jesus told the synagogue ruler, "Don't be afraid, just believe." You know, I have had I've been tempted recently with this thing of, I can't do it, what's asked of me. And this week, as I've had that start to come on me, my response has been, fear not. Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. Have faith. Jesus is here with me in my heart. So He's there. He's there. I can turn to Him. So we'll build on that a little bit here in a minute. Now, how can we share this answer that we have, the gospel, with others? When we would have to honestly say to them, "Hey, why don't you repent and accept Jesus? It doesn't really work that great for me, but it might for you. Because I'm anxious and struggling every single day. I'm worried and I have no joy, but you know, I'm told that you can have joy through this gospel, so I'm going to share this with you and maybe you can have it." That wouldn't be all that effective, would it? There has to be victory and joy and faith to even be able to share and invest with someone else. Now, the other night, we were tucking Caleb in, Lori and I, and I turned off the light, and Caleb said, trying to be funny, maybe some of y'all don't see Caleb's sense of humor maybe, but he's always trying to be funny. And so, he closes, it's dark, and so, you can feel his face until he's closed his eyes. And he goes, "Where are you, Mama? I can't see you. I can't see you, Mama." And so, Lori answers him, "You know I'm right here, Caleb. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean that I'm not here." And then she explained further. She said, "You know, like when you can't see Jesus, but you know that He is there with you. That's the same way. I'm right here. It's dark, but I'm right here. You can't see me." And a lot of us are like that. As soon as it gets a little bit dark, we start to panic. "Jesus, where are you? Where are you?" And we add to it by closing our eyes. As soon as it gets a little dark, we can't see Him, and we start panicking. Well, you know, David used to talk to himself in the Psalms Oh, my soul, why are you so distraught and down within me? You know, look to God. He would talk to himself. Well, this week, like I said, I've been taking the words of Jesus. So as soon as the lights start to go a little dark, or I feel that anxiousness start to come over me, then I take the words of Jesus. Take courage. Don't be afraid. It is I. Have faith. Have faith. That's the key to what he's called us to. Multiplication of the crop. Because we cannot do it. So whether you like it or not, you're in one of those groups. I've just labeled you. I've put you in a group. Well, you have to label yourself, but you're in one of those groups. You may not even, this could be someone's first time to ever be in a church, and you're in one of those groups because you have heard the word this morning. So you've heard the word this morning. So you automatically are in one of those groups. Now, you have to decide, is it going to bear fruit in your life and in your ministry, or is it going to get choked out, or is the first trouble going to knock it down, or the light's going to go out, and you go, where are you, Jesus? So you have a decision to make because the Word has put you into one of those groups. So you have to be honest. You're hearing the Word. Where's the fruit? Are you seeing a crop? The first step is to listen. He who has ears, let him hear. Jesus said about this very parable. Repent and begin again to hear and obey the Word because it should be continually changing your life. It should be multiplying. So you have fruit? Great! Go from 30 to 60 then. It should be continually impacting your life because you are continually hearing the Word. And as Lauren read for us, it does not return void. There's no like limit ceiling on this. You keep going. It continues to change your life. But you must hear the Word. That means you must deal with those barriers that this takes you to go back and take it to God. But you must deal with those barriers and see them taken down or you will not hear the Word. So, I would encourage you that God is calling you to respond to His Word, to produce a crop, to have a fruitful ministry. I can't do it. Well, that's how I feel too. And how do I respond? Take courage. Do not be afraid. It is I, Jesus. Have faith. As soon as Jesus got in the boat, it started to go somewhere.